are back with episode 834 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. We get to talk about shows tonight, right, John?
That's right.
Hooray!
Actually, we get to talk about shows, because you know we didn't do any of that before.
Fair enough.
But yes, this is the show where we go over the episodic discussion, if you will. We kind of cherry-pick the shows that we watched in the last couple weeks, and we kind of talk about the ones that either really made us happy, the ones that maybe didn't make us as happy, and then the ones that we're just devoted to right now. And there's a lot of shows to pick from because the fall season has really gotten off to into full speed. So before we do any of that, though, we're going to go ahead and give you a disclaimer. So, Gary, take it away.
Yes, in the course of our expounding our logic on the detailed analysis of the shows or just what we thought was funny about them, we might reveal things. Spoilers. Who lives? Who dies? Someone's eating for lunch. Regardless, it's not our intention to harm anyone in this. We just want to have a free and open discussion on these shows. Hopefully, it's been a few weeks since they aired, so you should have had time to catch up on them. And if not, kick back. We're not gonna destroy anything on you as we talk about this stuff, but we might reveal what happened last week.
I do believe that a logical discussion is the best way to proceed.
Just what I need, another Vulcan. Oh, wait. Oh, jeez.
I'm a Vulcan fanatic. That's right. All right. Well, yes, I think that we might as well start right there because it seems like the show that everybody is talking about these days, and that's The Orville, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
The best Star Trek on the air. Yeah, I say that out loud? Oh, gosh. Oh, geez.
Well, most of us are saying that out loud. And so many are taking it as super disparaging of Discovery, but it really isn't.
No.
People. It's just that they really are kind of carrying the banner right now of what we, I guess you could say, as we've said a few different times now, the comfort zone of Trek, the nostalgic Trek from the 90s that we all kind of love so much. Yeah, that is what the Orville is handing us or delivering us. Discovery is going into other domains to some degree in a good way and sometimes in ways that challenge our point of view. But that's the way it should be, right? You don't want it to always be everything that you expect. But that being said, let's go ahead and talk the Orville. I have no problem kind of bringing that up right away because, man, the last episode was really good. I liked it a lot.
I guess we can start talking about the most recent episode, and it was, it was good. I admit
moral. Yeah, I jumped the gun slightly there, but I don't care.
Oh, did you want to talk? Which one did you want to talk? Oh, I'm sorry. Well, let's talk about.
Actually, it doesn't matter because both of them I thought were really good. We can start with Krill because that was a couple weeks ago, and that was the one where they basically snuck onto one of the Krill ships and started to actually flesh out the culture of the quote-unquote enemy that they fought in the premiere. And Gary, you gave it a 9, so I think you agree with me that was a really good episode.
Oh, I'll agree. And, obviously it harkens back to original Trek more so than 90s Trek, as we were mentioning earlier, John. This is, this is definitely a page out of when, the Enterprise went to steal the cloaking device. They get done up to look like the aliens and, go over there and, they find out that they're not necessarily this faceless, cruel, focused only on destruction type of race. They really put a face to it. They had children on the ship that go to school. It definitely gives you that sense that your villain is not always some completely unredeemable person. They have their own reasons and goals for doing what they're doing, and they definitely don't agree with yours. But at the same time, they have their own concerns, and some of them are really valid. And I enjoyed that point of view, as I was saying, I think last show, it's nice that I like that the idea of these sort of moral plays, which is to me the heart of Star Trek, is still being able to be done and that it's not doesn't necessarily come across as too hokey or too preachy. It's just sort of opening your eyes to an issue. And that's what Star Trek has always done. And that's what the Orville is doing now. Admittedly, I feel that they're lacking a bit of depth to the issue that sometimes I think the original show got across a little bit better, but they're still new. This is only episode 6 of the first season, so I'm more than willing to give them a pass. I feel like they have all the gears going right, and they'll pick up the speed and really take off going forward. But they hit everything I wanted them to hit on an episode like this, and admittedly some of the humor is a little hokey, perhaps bordering on slapstick, but that's this show, and that's what they decided to go with. They keep it a little bit lighter, and I'm happy with that. I don't have an issue with that. A lot of people don't either. I just hope they don't veer away from the formula, so to speak, just to veer away from the formula.
Oh, I think if anything, they are honing in on it more. I think that they were a little far afield trying to be too funny before. And now they are very quickly coming to the conclusion that they just need to have a few comedic grace notes in the episode. And if they play it, the more they play it straight, the better the comedy actually works, because it does kind of hit a little bit left and far afield. But that what people are really looking for is show us a slightly more irreverent and comedic version of what we really love from these storied science fiction franchises. Like I said, it's not just Trek. It's got elements of Battlestar Galactica and a couple other things in there, or Babylon 5 even. So the morality tales, I think, are really nice. What I loved about this is that they got right to the heart of the matter, where they said, hey, here are these people that have been monolithic to us, just horrible, terrible enemies. And then they did a really nice job of slowly building them up to be perhaps more sympathetic. And then they show that their religion is incredibly violent. And yet they've now made you sympathize with elements of their culture, which I thought was a really smart thing to do. That is not something that you would normally see even in, say, a straight up parody or satire. They're definitely trying to bridge a lot of different story elements here. And I think that the more that they let Seth MacFarlane settle down and play things straighter, it works better. When he tries to be the funny guy, it doesn't always work. But when he actually shows some degree of leadership, I find that the show really actually comes across the way. You know what it is that I actually start feeling like there's certain elements of New Frontier that start to rise to the surface. If you know what I mean, the Peter David books.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, I'm a fan of Calhoun and Company as well. Yeah. But yeah, no, well, definitely, I think I feel that. Yeah. I'll say Seth MacFarlane because I'm blanking on his actual character name, but he's got quite a degree of autonomy that, you know, that gives you that feeling.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking Peter David writing an Orville novel would be amazing. Because David's humor sometimes kind of veers into that category too. Maybe not exactly in line with MacFarlane's type, but David has been known to stretch the credibility of events or even characterization in the Trek universe if it means getting the joke that he's looking for. So it wouldn't be the first time that I thought to myself, that's kind of what Orville's doing. But yeah, anything else you want to say about the Orville other than people really should be checking this out? Because I'll even say the one we're not going to talk about right now until the next time was, in my opinion, took a concept from first season Next Generation and absolutely trounced it. So just nailed it even better. So I think that they are hitting their stride. I know that the ratings have dropped precipitously over time, but I hope that they are still good enough for Fox to support it.
Yes, it's interesting. I've been reading some about that, and at least what one critic had mentioned, you know, some people were expecting a slapstick Seth MacFarlane show, and now that they're not getting it, they're leaving.
Yes.
And but at the same time, people who dismissed it as Trek fans it's Seth MacFarlane, are now starting to pick it up. But unfortunately, as you said, the numbers are going out a little quicker than they're coming in right now.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see. We'll see if it can maybe find a some kind of balance here so that it can stay on the air. Let's see. I'm just going to go night by night here a little bit. So sure. On Wednesdays, we've got Riverdale and Mr. Robot. I think that Riverdale has come back pretty well. Have you been able to pick up with it at all?
No, I haven't, sir. The last season really left me wanting as it drove to a close, so I wasn't sure whether to pick it up for this season yet. Do you think it started off strong, though?
I think so. It's still very much a guilty pleasure. Okay. But I still think it is in some pretty good ways. Mr. Robot, I know that Edmund watches that too. He gave the premiere a 9, as did I, and I'll just go ahead and let people know what he thought. After the wayward second season, agreed, a much more confident beginning to this one. Now that both the social and psychological frameworks have been established, the story and the actors have really found their footing. Very interesting seeing Elliot come around to repenting, but of course, Mr. Robot isn't going to let him. Plus, excellent work by Rami Malek showing Mr. Robot taking over before they switch to Christian Slater and confirm it. So, yes, there's that. And then he also said of the second episode, loved the establishing montage showing Elliot's new routine and journey up the evil, I mean, E-core ladder, even as we know it's not going to be that easy, and his therapist has no idea what she's stepping into. Absolutely not. The main character of Mr. Robot continues to be one of the most fascinatingly disturbed and broken individuals on television right now, and it's actually quite amazing to watch that show. It's definitely refound itself after a somewhat wayward second season, as Edmund put it. On Thursday nights, we have Supernatural, which is in its 13th season, and it's
not stopping anytime
still,
soon.
The Impala's still going strong, I'll put it that way. The budget is definitely showing itself. There are times where I feel like, wow, that they really could have used a little more financial support for some scenes, but I think they're still swinging and trying to hit the fences with what they've got. Unfortunately, the second episode of the season was written by two of my least favorite writers on the writing staff. I still don't know how they've been around all these years when they literally always deliver under or subpar episodes, in my opinion, that almost always involve bringing characters in that have these rich histories with the Winchesters that we've never seen before. I kind of hate that kind of Mary Sue-esque type of writing, but there we are. But Supernatural, always fun. Always fun. Right now, it's coming in for me around a high sevens, so still quite a bit of above average. Arrow is back, and I think that they're also continuing to show the renewed spirit that was driving some of the fifth season, and especially the latter half of the fifth season. What do you think, Gary?
Yeah, no, I thought they came back very strong from the season. I think that thankfully we're not doing any type of large cast shuffle this season. I've really started to appreciate and enjoy the supporting characters. Or, geez, they're almost getting more time than the actual main character. So I'm enjoying all of them. I'm so glad that they are sticking with all of them. I believe everybody came back for this season. So that's great news. I'm not sure where they're going with the season. This idea that Ollie needs to be more hands-on with his son is concerning to me. I mean, we saw the last time he tried to get a family done, and his excellent cooking skills, by the way. But we knew it didn't work out in the end, and I just feel like we're getting set up for failure again. So I'm hoping they execute it differently this time.
Mm. Yeah, I have a couple concerns about the way that's playing out, and some of it is, in fact, that whenever a storyline or a show relies upon the consistency of a child actor, it can be dicey, and that's unfortunately true here as well, where I feel like it's a thankless task to be Oliver Queen's son. It's even more thankless task to try and portray Oliver Queen's son, because he's not doing a huge job of it. I think he's kind of there, and that's about it. But otherwise, I kind of like some of the things that they're doing to change things up. In particular, I like this idea that Oliver is forced to take a step back, and Diggle is now kind of, as some previous seasons have kind of foreshadowed, he is now stepping in as the Arrow, and there are a lot of changes that then precipitates. And I find that shakeup of the dynamic is a lot more interesting than, hey, can I help you with your math homework? But anyway.
Math is an important subject.
It is an important subject. I don't need to see it on television more than I see it in my own life. But anyway. We already talked about The Orville, which is, of course, on Thursday nights. Friday nights, what I have on the list here is The Exorcist, which I watch and continues to be nice and creepy. It's a show that I love watching on my tablet in the dark with headphones. It's great for that. And you get some of these scenes that are ultra creepy, and man, yeah, it works really well. It's a nice little slow burn type of show. I really cannot believe it got a second season, and I'm just really happy that it did, because there's really nothing else like it right now on television that works for me in quite the same way. And then a completely other side of the equation, we have Inhumans.
I've already given up.
I don't blame you. Okay. I'm literally only kind of seeing if this is another one of those Iron Fist situations where they struggle mightily at the beginning and then somehow pull out of the death spiral. But right now, Inhumans is by far the show I like the least on the air. And it is pretty much something that if I let it go for half a week before I pick back up on it, it's fine. Really, it's just because I'm being a little bit of a completist when it comes to Marvel TV right now. But it is, I do occasionally sit back and wonder, boy, if there were a couple more shows on during the week, would I even be paying attention to this at all, because it's really hard for me to understand how they misread the situation. I think that Bronze Thumb, of all people, mentioned a long time ago that he noticed that the showrunner for this is the same one as for Iron Fist, and that and actually the last few seasons of Dexter, and he goes back as far as the series finale for Dexter and says anything that has happened since then that this guy has touched has fallen apart. So yeah, unfortunately Inhumans is not doing well right now. I still feel like the villain is the most sympathetic person on the show. That's a problem. Especially yes. As they make him more arch and more despicable, and it's like, nope, still agree with him more.
Oh boy.
Yeah, exactly. All right. On Sunday nights, of course, the show that first comes to mind is Star Trek Discovery. So we had two episodes, Choose Your Pain, which was the introduction or reintroduction of Harry Mudd to the Discovery universe. And then we have Leith, which was, of course, the episode I mentioned last time, which focused quite a bit on the relationship between Sarek and Burnham. General thoughts now that we're about halfway or approaching the halfway point for the season?
It's peeling out in a way I didn't quite expect. It's much more edgy and gritty, and I don't see the fulfillment of Burnham really being the main character of this show. It really feels like Lorca's really been chewing the scenery up lately, and I feel like the captain has taken over. I'll see if they scale it back, and I'm more concerned with his progress, honestly, because it's shrouded in mystery than Burnham, who, while her behavior, as you were saying, John, is extremely inconsistent, I feel like I know so much about her that there's really not much I don't know how much more I need to know about her backstory at this point, or I sort of have a sense of what motivates her, and while she'll make screwy decisions based on her own internal logic that might not necessarily flow with the actual logic of the situation, I'm just not connecting with her that much. Lorca, or even Salu for that matter, is much more entertaining and enjoyable characters for me at this point in the series.
What I think that the writers are trying to go for is that they are really positioning Lorca as this Ahab-esque type of character who wants to find the magical way to end the war with the Klingons and has this super psychological issue, which is very clear by the end of the most recent episode. And okay, I buy that. And then I also buy the fact that they want Burnham to be the, shall we say, moral compass or moral mirror for Lorca. But I don't.
Burnham?
Yeah. But that's the problem. I don't think she's as strong a character as Lorca.
Salu might be the moral center, but I just don't see her being it.
Well, the fact that she was the one who objected to the way that the tardigrade was being used, the way that she is, it always seems like she's trying to go for the more classic, I guess you could say, Starfleet Federation Trek-esque type of solution versus Lorca's very
atypical.
What's the word for it? Overly militaristic way. They almost seem like they're becoming the embodiment of the military versus science or civilian science type of thing. But we also see Burnham at the end of that episode saying that she's really happy to be actually serving in Starfleet again under Lorca. So I think they are trying to set up this whole idea of there being that tension between the overly, focused and psychologically damaged Lorca and Burnham as his kind of slowly developing moral conscience to some degree. But the fact that I'm even kind of hand-waving this tells you that they're not there yet. If that's what they're going for, they're not there.
Yeah, and we're getting a little broad, but one of the things I did want to focus on was the return, or I guess you might say introduction, given our time frame, of Harry Mudd.
Yeah.
He seemed a much more despicable character. He always seemed opportunistic, but at this point he almost seems bordering on malevolent. I just it felt like a slight change to the character base. Admittedly, he's stuck in a Klingon jail, so yeah, I might not be at my typical characterization either at that point. And who knows, maybe we might even see some fluctuation or change as time goes by. But I was a little surprised with the edginess of him, I guess. Not that I was looking for hokey, but this idea that he was actually, you know, working with the Klingons intentionally against the human being seemed to push things a little bit further than I was comfortable with. But I mean, it was there nonetheless. So, but what do you think of the reintroduction or introduction of Harry Mudd? Do you feel it was in keeping with the historic character? Do you feel they went off the edge? Do you feel, oh, he'll change and end up where we see him in TOS? What was your feeling on the whole thing?
Well, I have a feeling that they're going to bring him in more than just the one episode, and I do feel like there is a bit of a character arc that they're looking for here. But I'm going to be honest, I was never a huge fan of Mudd to begin with. So I'm kind of leery of this anyway. But it does make sense that his self-interest would express itself differently over time, depending on his experiences. And we are seeing him in, as you said, a Klingon jail, and he has adapted to the situation. And you do hear him, however, talking very much about the fact that his business is in the more salacious side of things, which does make sense to where he ends up in TOS. So I think that there is a bit of an arc that they are trying to give him, or at least suggest for him. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more points on that curve, but I don't know. I think it was perfectly fine, but I also felt like the two episodes with Mudd in the original series were way over the top. And in fact, I think that some of the things that are looked on a little bit fondly as far as his appearances in TOS these days, that would need to be adapted very differently. The approach of Mudd's women, for instance, today would never fly.
Yeah.
So that's where I feel like they're also doing a bit of a change to make his motives seem, instead of, what's the word?
Almost lecherous.
Innocently lecherous. more playful. Where now when we look back on that behavior or we look at that kind of behavior, we notice that there is a bit of a sinister aspect to that. And I think that's what they are playing up right now. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, we'll see, though, because I really don't think this was the only time we're going to see him. Okay, also on Sunday night, we had the end of the most recent season of Fear the Walking Dead.
Has that been renewed?
It has been renewed.
Okay, just curious.
Not only that, but for those who thought that the third season felt almost pointless, there may be a reason for that. I guess at some point during the production, they did make a decision to replace the showrunner for the fourth season. So even if it felt like the third season just kind of came to a just thud of an ending, the fact of the matter is that they're going to have someone else at the helm next time, and that could radically change things. It also doesn't hurt that the end of the third season left just about everyone, except for two or three characters, in doubt as far as their fate. So whoever comes in as the new showrunner can decide who lives and who dies. So it could shake things up. We also had the return of the actual variant show, The Walking Dead. Gary, what did you think of that?
Oh gosh, I liked it a lot. I thought it came back very strong, stronger than their typical openings. A lot of time it's always a build up or a recovery from something, but it seems like they hit the ground literally running, and we got to see them getting very aggressive. I liked it a lot. I thought it was thought it worked out really well. I enjoyed everybody sort of getting together to beat the saviors. I enjoyed can't remember the character's name, but the guy with the blonde hair who was one of the saviors, giving them intel, sneaking intel out via Dwight via an arrow. I thought that was quite a nice little twist to throw into everything. I enjoy how everyone was working together, but at the same time they were giving them their own space. I think about I'll call it the pep talk that they were giving on the back of the truck. You know, first we had Rick chime in, then we had the king,
Ezekiel,
sort of give his own little speech and move on. And I thought that was sort of nice how they were giving each group their time to, speak and let their will or what they wanted to be done talk up. And Also, as well as Maggie chiming in now that she's sort of, I guess she's taken over Hilltop at this point, for all in fact. And that was nice. So even as we, you know, as we go through everything, everybody's, you know, it's nice and it's working together. And I haven't seen this type of coordination, I don't think, ever. I mean, it's always been like our group against somebody else. But now, you know, they're really starting to form, come together. And who knows? Humanity might have hope after all.
I had a couple problems with it.
Okay. I didn't say it was perfect either.
As an opening salvo, I thought it was perfectly fine. I didn't think it was horrible, but I did feel like the beginning of the episode, it took way too long to get things moving because, once they made the point that they were taking out the scouts and the lookouts, they didn't have to spend the next, like, five versions of that. Just, you did it, you showed it, move on.
I agree that they could have done one or two and just checked off the list right there. And you sort of like check off the last two and you knew that they were all of them were done type of thing. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. It just felt like they were dragging it out. Then there is the whole thing of, okay, I know that this is what's in the source material. I know that, but I had the same problem with the source material. They draw out Negan. They've made a point of the fact that they've planned this out. They've taken out the lookouts. They've done this brilliant job of basically setting up an attack on the sanctuary. You have the leader of the Saviors walk out into openly onto a balcony. And you're telling me not one person thought about the fact that they should have about 10 snipers immediately open fire and take him out.
Oh, no, you got Rick with his handgun. We're good.
No, it's the stupidest damn thing ever, and it drove me nuts when I read the comics, and drove me nuts here, because I was saying, this is just artificially extending the conflict, and for all that they're making, like, everyone was like, yeah, Rick's back on the attack, Rick is back on the offensive, it's like, Rick overlooked the most obvious solution, which granted is something Rick does, but they made a big point out of the fact that he was now allied with all these other people who had a vested interest in defanging the Saviors as fast as possible to avoid a counterattack. The best thing to do is to take out Negan and then negotiate. But he starts off basically saying, hey, you guys, aren't you going to turn on this guy? And they're all like, no. It's like, yeah. Great, Rick, if you had just taken the guy out, then when you ask them, so what are you going to do now? None of them are going to look over at Negan and be like, we're going to do whatever he says. Because, oh, wait, he's dead now. We can't do that. Now our enemy's in disarray. Now we hit the sanctuary with, like, thousands of walkers. And then there's also the part where they were shooting out the windows, and I was saying, great, you used an awful lot of ammunition. Did you hit one person?
Oh, yeah. Because, bullets are easy to come by.
Yeah, I guess so. But wait, in the comics it was, because, spoilers, they still had Eugene, who was making bullets for them.
Which is why they originally showed it.
Yes.
Well, I think, just as we don't necessarily go off too much on this, but yeah, they're doing a good job of they're actually following the comic books reasonably close at this point.
Yeah, which, for better or worse.
Yeah.
I think that definitely now that things have gotten moving along, things hopefully will be a little bit better, but I really just, that bugged me because, I'm sitting there reading comments because I was actually in a live chat at the time, and everyone's, oh yeah, wow, this is exactly what they ought to be doing, and I'm facepalming the entire time. It's like, guys, no. Like, Oliver on Arrow put it best to his kid, actually, and basically said, find the bully with, the biggest bully, look for his nose, and hit that as hard as you can. It's like, yeah. Oliver Queen would have taken care of this problem immediately.
Yeah.
Rick and his allies, no. But, I mean, that was just more of a, I kind of knew that was coming. I knew what part of the story they were in. And it just kind of, was like, I know this is going to bug me. And yes, it bugged me. So I'm hoping now that we've moved past that, that I can just overlook that and enjoy the complete devolution of this conflict in the next few episodes.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.